Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords.
This is the Rental Income Podcast.
And now, Dan Lee.
I just love hearing stories like this. My guest on the podcast today has a great story. He set a goal that he wanted to buy 10 duplexes in 10 years. And the awesome thing is he has done it. He bought his 10 duplexes and he's continued to buy even more properties after that. So I want to pick his brain. I want to figure out how he did this and what he's learned along the way. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back and we will meet Corey Binsfield.
Are you having a hard time finding great investment properties? Unfortunately, the best deals are rarely found locally. Successful investing begins with the right properties in the right markets. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best deals across the U.S. Our simple, proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly cash flow. Get your free copy of the Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing at noradarealestate.com/guide. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com/guide.
Corey, was it really as simple as setting a goal to buy 10 duplexes and then just doing it?
I hate to say it, but it was that simple.
Wow.
And but doesn't mean it was easy, but it was that simple.
So let's go into this a little bit. Tell me about when you bought your first property. Why did you decide to buy a duplex over a single family?
When back when I got the first one, I kept looking at like single family versus, you know, a two unit or a three unit. And I guess it just came down to, what if the tenant leaves? If I have a single family house, then I'm 100% vacant. So I thought, you know what, if I have a duplex, I get to spread the risk so that worst case scenario, one tenant leaves and I can fix it up and then rent it to another person, but still make my mortgage payment.
Okay. And were you buying one property a year?
Yeah, the original goal was obviously, you know, the goal was one property per year, but I found when I first got started, that was pretty challenging. So what I ended up doing was the first year I bought this dumpy little triplex. It was a fixer-upper. And then after I lived in that one, I was able to get some seasoning. And then I approached a bank and they said, oh, you already own a property? And I said, yeah. I go, I want to get this other duplex. And they're like, well, let's get a first-time home buyer loan, FHA-style loan, and you can get into that next one for like, I think it was like 3% down at the time. So the second one I didn't get till probably 2 years later. So okay. Let's say my third year.
Were you, when you would buy a new building, did you always live there?
Yep, I always lived there.
Okay.
Until I got up to probably, duplex. Well, let me think about that now. That's a good question. Let's see. You know, actually the second duplex I lived in, and then properties 3 through 10, I didn't live in.
Okay. Now, was there any criteria that you were looking at on what a good deal would be?
The way I looked at it was, you know, I'm a big value investor. So just as a result of my job, and I just wanted to find properties that were kind of like a formula. They had to be at least 10% below market value. And then they also had to cash flow enough so that, you know, one side of the duplex covered the mortgage and the other side covered maintenance, repairs, and profit.
Okay. And was there any kind of, like, a lot of times people will talk about the 1% rule or the 2% rule. Did you follow anything like that when you were looking at properties?
So it was kind of funny. I almost like backed into that because if you run the numbers, in order to cash flow on a duplex, you have to be at 1% or higher to make the numbers work.
Okay.
And so I just think by default, I was always looking at those type of deals.
Okay. So, all right. So just to kind of talk some round numbers so everybody can understand, you would buy a property for, say, hypothetically, $100,000, and your total rent for both units would be $1,000 a month.
Exactly.
So, all right. So each side is $500, and your mortgage payment would be about $500.
Yep.
And then the other $500 would cover everything else. Now,
exactly.
Out of the $500 that's covering everything else, how much did you put aside? Because I feel like a mistake a lot of times people make is they they think, okay, I'm covering the mortgage. I've got $500 a month profit.
Yeah, but I see a lot of people do that. It's wait a sec.
Yeah, I think
the numbers right.
Yeah, I think you know, people get in trouble because they don't plan that. Because expenses aren't a fixed thing. It's not like every month you're going to have a repair issue coming up.
Right.
Did you set aside a portion of that money every month for when things came up?
What I did in the beginning was I focused on duplexes where the tenants had to pay all the expenses.
Okay.
So including like water, garbage, and heat.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the end result there was I was literally looking just for duplexes where there wasn't any shared heat or shared water. So that $500, let's say in profit, mm-hmm. was a true profit. But because I was in growth phase at the time, I was taking that money and basically plowing it all into what I called my real estate account. I set up a separate bank account for that. And then I would use that money for repairs. And I would say, I didn't like directly say, oh, I need this CapEx account. I got to set aside $200 a month for a future emergency. I basically just took that money and kept plowing it in to more properties.
Okay.
And then over time, as the portfolio grew, I discovered that, you know, if you got 10 duplexes, let's say 20 units, there's enough cash flow there coming in that you can handle, I'd say, the basic emergencies like, oh, furnace goes out or water heater goes out or you need new washer and dryers, you know.
Okay.
But for like a big, big item, let's say like a roof, I always had a credit line attached to some of the properties.
Okay.
And when that would occur, then I could access the credit line, or if there's enough equity, as I was growing the portfolio, I would just do a refi, replace the roof, and then use more money from the refi to buy another one.
For your credit line, was that like a line of credit on one of the properties?
Yeah, this is back in the easy lending days, you know, where basically if you could breathe, you'd get a loan.
Right.
And I remember one day my banker's like, hey, you need any credit lines against these properties? I'm like, how's that work? He goes, well, we can give you a second, you know, home equity line of credit. I go, I always thought that was just for my house. He goes, no, you can put them on your properties too. So then I'm like, oh, how many can I get? And he's like, well, our max is 5. I'm like, okay, I'll take 5. And so I basically had 5 lines of credits on 5 different duplexes.
Oh, that's great. But
yeah, it was awesome.
Have they closed them out? Like, are you still able? Okay.
Well, actually, these were pretty good credit lines, because the way they worked out was they were open line of credits for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then they basically close them out, and then you have a choice of how you want to pay it off. So you can pay it off over 10 years, 15, 20, or 30 years.
Okay. So today, if somebody wanted to get a credit line on one of their rentals, that's not really a product that's available today.
I think they're still available, but I would, because I haven't done one in so long, I'm probably not the worst person to ask that question.
Okay.
But I would assume you could, but then I would also assume that the underwriting would be way more strict.
Okay. So advice for someone that's maybe looking to do what you've done, you would recommend that they're either putting money aside every month, or they have access to a line of credit or to some other way to help them get past any emergency that might come up.
Exactly. Okay. And you can also throw in like credit cards. So if you have, you know, if you only have one credit card, I'd recommend someone get a couple more. And that way, the key is you have to have access to money that they're not going to take away from you.
That's a good point, because markets do change and you need to make sure that you're ready and prepared for it. Now, what about your tenants? When the financial crisis hit, were your tenants able to pay their rent, or did you have any trouble?
Not really. I have a pretty good mix of tenants, and a lot of them were students as well as just, you know, basic working class people that, or what I call the working stiffs, which is they're out of college and they're working maybe 2 or 3 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say as pretty much my vacancy probably went down. I mean, I'm in a really tight market, but I probably dropped down to, let's say, a 5% vacancy rate.
Okay.
And then some of the tenants that were struggling, I decided to lower the rent just because my big fear was some of the commercial banks would come back to me and say, hey, how are your rents doing? You know, are you keeping your units full?
Right.
And so the goal there was just kind of basically cut all expenses, don't do any improvements, and batten down the hatches and just weather the storm.
Now, today, you've grown your portfolio past the 10 properties. You've got 116 doors today, which I think is incredible. Congratulations on growing the portfolio. And what I think is amazing is that you manage the portfolio by yourself and you still have a full-time job. Is it hard keeping track of all those doors?
It's not, because I've always been a big believer in technology. And so as I was buying like the latest property management software. And so at this point, I like to say my software, it's the same type of software that if you had 100,000 units, this is what you would buy if you're your own property management company.
Okay.
And so I find that the software basically keeps track of everything I need. And then with my two businesses, I can share some of the tasks, like my assistant can help out on the rentals. As well as I've got a full-time maintenance tech. And then I've got access to a bunch of 1099-style contractors.
Is your phone ringing nonstop with tenants having issues or...?
Surprisingly not. I think... I don't know if I've trained the tenants. I hate to use that term. But it seems like these days, a lot, especially this younger generation, you know, they are just so tech-savvy. So everyone's paying their rent online. If there's a maintenance issue, I get an online maintenance request. And then I basically email that over to my maintenance technician. And then, you know, we're taking care of it within 24 hours.
So your phone isn't ringing. People aren't actually calling you that often?
No, it's... And I did set up a separate phone just for the rentals. I use a Google Voice number.
Okay.
And so, you think my phone would be ringing off the hook, but I've got part of the reason too is I have a lot of low maintenance tenants. I don't rent to anybody. I'm really selective within, of course, fair housing guidelines.
Sure.
But I'm really careful who I let in the property.
You know, that actually brings up another point here. So with duplexes, a lot of times I feel like you have to match people's personality types because they're in such close quarters. So if you have someone that you know gets up at 4 a.m. to go to work, and maybe they're a real quiet person, and maybe you have a college student that wants to move in next door, would you ever think about maybe that wouldn't be the best fit for that building?
Well, you have to be careful because you can't. There's this concept called steering where if you show a property, they can make the case that you're only showing them properties based upon, let's say, certain guidelines, so you're discriminating.
Okay. Yeah.
So what I do is I basically, if someone's looking at a duplex, I'll basically stress to them, this is a duplex. There are hardwood floors on the top floor. Are you okay with that? And then if they're college kids, I'll tell them, look, I've got this amazing tenant below you, and I'm not going to put up with any parting, any issues. If you got a problem with that, you do not want to rent from me.
Okay.
And so once again, I guess maybe that's how I train my tenants.
Yeah.
You know, before they actually move in.
I think that's good. Set the expectation and let them
right.
know what to expect. And so no one's paying you with check. Like everyone's pretty much paying online.
I'm at about, I'd say 95% of the tenants.
Okay. That's awesome.
I'd say with 116 units, I probably got like 200. A little over 200 tenants.
Yeah.
So
that's great. Now, another thing I want to bring up is you have a really good real estate blog, and you had an article on there about why you shouldn't buy a property with your 401k.
Now, Dan, that blog's a work in progress, but thank you.
It's good, though. It's good. Thank
I have no clue what I'm doing on that blog.
But you had a really good article on there about why you shouldn't buy a property with your 401k. And I think this is interesting. Can you tell us why?
Well, the original intent of the article was to show someone that if you compared a 401k to a single family rental, and you look at all the benefits after tax over, let's say, a 30-year time frame, mm-hmm. a single-family rental will, a decent one, if you buy it correctly, you're going to average about 17% a year. And in that article, I decided to add that you never want to buy a property inside an IRA or a 401k, because I see a lot of these promoters say, oh, just buy it inside your IRA. And the main reason is this. If you look at any type of qualified plan or retirement plan, all the money grows tax deferred. So you're not taxed at it on it today because you get that upfront tax deduction. And then when you pull the money out, that money comes out as a regular ordinary income tax rate. Mm-hmm. So the money that goes in today basically is going to be taxed at a higher amount when you retire, because if you retire correctly, you'll be in a high tax bracket.
Right.
So the problem is, you buy real estate, physical real estate, not like notes, okay, or doing loans or land. But if you buy physical real estate within these retirement plans, it just doesn't make any sense to me. You strip out all the tax benefits of real estate. And worse, when you die, okay, in real estate, if you die, you can just hand it off to your kids and they pay no taxes on it with this concept called a stepped up basis. And if all this money is in your retirement account, then your kids are going to just get taxed up the wazoo as they pull that money out after you die.
Right. Okay.
And then the other issue is you can't do technically you could do an exchange. But once again, all your money's tied up inside this retirement account. And it is the most, I cringe when people do that, because you're taking out all the wonderful benefits of real estate.
Now, let me ask you another question. And I think you're actually probably really qualified to answer this, because your day job is you're a financial advisor.
Yep.
So if somebody has money in their IRA and they want to use that money as a down payment to buy a property, do you think that's a good idea or a bad idea?
I actually think it's a good idea, because I've done it.
Okay. Okay.
So like my very, very, very first property, there's a thing called a first-time home buyer exclusion.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to buy my very first property by pulling money out of my IRA, and it was there's no tax penalty.
Oh, okay.
And you still have to pay taxes on that money. So let's say you put down 10 grand, mm-hmm. that would increase your income that year by 10,000. But you don't have to deal with the 10% penalty.
That's only valid if someone is going to live in the house for their first property.
Yep.
But so
you actually have to live there.
Okay. So if someone is maybe looking to buy their third or fourth or fifth rental property, and they were going to have to pay the penalties for taking the money out early, do you think it's a good idea still?
You know, I'm a lot of financial advisors now will probably scream when I say this, but I actually, if the deal is right and it cash flows like crazy, or you know it's gonna, you know, really grow over time, you're in a strong, really strong market, I'm a big fan of just eating the 10% penalty and going for it.
Yeah.
And the reason why is, if you do the math, even after you pay that penalty up front, you're still going to come out ahead.
Okay.
And yep. I mean, it's your money. Now, right. There's more efficient ways to do that. If you have a 401k, you know, I've got a client that I basically said, hey, let's pull $50,000, which was the max, out of your 401ks for the down payment on that, you know, 8-unit apartment building you want so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was able to do that. But you have to be careful on that, because you have to pay that money back over, I believe it's 5 years.
Okay.
And if you were to lose your job, then that money you just pulled out becomes due and payable that year.
Okay. All right. And my final question to you, as a financial advisor and a real estate investor, if somebody has, say, $20,000, and they could use that money to maybe pay off a mortgage or use that money as a down payment to buy another property, what would you tell them to do?
Wow. That's, if someone knows what they're doing, mm-hmm. in regards to real estate, then I would recommend that they do not pay down their mortgage.
Okay.
And they go ahead and buy the rental. Okay. And the reason why is, after you build up the rental and the cash flow, you can easily use that cash flow from the rental to pay off your mortgage.
Right. Okay. And do you think having a mortgage paid off is a good idea? Or do you think that, I mean, leverage is obviously one of the most powerful things in real estate. Do you think that not having that leverage is good? Like, should you always have a mortgage, or do you see any value in paying off a mortgage?
You know, it's funny. Someone made a blog comment on my post about, there's a post on there about Dave Ramsey, and I'm kind of like the anti-Dave Ramsey. But he basically said that, oh, well, you should only have debt when it comes to rental properties because you have rental income streams. And I basically said, no, I go, I'd rather have a mortgage on my house so I could buy more property. And the example I used was, I just picked up a 11-unit building, and I basically had to put down $110,000. And let's just imagine I had a house worth $110,000 and the mortgage is paid off. Well, I'd rather take that debt equity that's making me nothing and use it to buy an 11-unit apartment building that brings in $2,000 a month after all expenses. And then I can easily cover the mortgage payment with that $2,000 a month.
Right, right.
It just depends if you want to grow faster, I guess, comes down to.
Okay. You know. Awesome. Well, Corey, tell us where we can reach you. Give us your blog if someone is looking for some financial advice and they want to reach out to you that way. Well, what's the best way for someone to get in contact with you?
Best place to be would go to my blog I just started. It's called 10toamillion.com. The concept is buy 10 duplexes and you'll have $1 million in 10 years. And the website address is 10TEN and then the number 2 and then million.com. So 10toamillion.com.
Great.
Or you can find me on Bigger Pockets. Sometimes I write blog posts for them, as well as I've got a profile there.
Okay, great. And we'll go ahead and put all the links on our website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode 104. Well, Corey, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Dan.
I appreciate it.
This was fun.
Great. Yeah, this was awesome. And thank you for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.